Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live call-in talk show. I'm Brian Shields. Are you buying or selling a home or residential property? If you've never done it before, it can be a daunting process, and even if you have, it can still be rather daunting. There are often a lot of steps involved and a lot to consider. Well, we have a licensed real estate professional in the studio today to answer your questions about the process of buying or selling a home. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. You can give us a call, 800-348-2551. The number is 800-348-2551. You can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on your Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments, WAMC Vox Pop, or email us at voxpop@WAMC.org. Or if you're like me and you were born when Eisenhower was president, you probably prefer the telephone at 800-348-2551. That's 800-348-2551. Alexander Monticello, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We often say it's a buyer or a seller's market. Is that really the case? And if so, what is it right now?
You know, I think right now we're in a fairly balanced market. One of the metrics that they often look at is the month supply of inventory. What they're looking at is given the current inventory of homes and the rate at which homes are selling for, how many months would it take to exhaust the current supply? Typically, a six-month supply of inventory is considered a balanced market. We're at about 7.9 months supply of inventory, just a hair above. But, you know, that only means so much because I can give you multiple examples this year of situations where we've seen multiple offers on property. So it can vary greatly depending on the property and location.
Yeah, I bought a house about 12, 13 years ago. And at that time, you better make an offer that day, or you didn't get the house. I mean, it was absolutely crazy.
Yeah, we're not seeing those times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this is more of a healthy market where properties that are priced appropriately, that are in good condition and well-maintained, they'll move within a few weeks.
One of the biggest decisions, I think, that you make and maybe the buyer makes, how much do we ask? How do you calculate that? That asking price.
Yeah, I tell people price is often subjective. You can have the same house be worth two different prices for two different people based on particular attributes that house may have, based on the location, based on the fact that it might have a finished basement or a larger fenced-in backyard. But there's every realtor will do a market analysis, and you know that comes up with. That the market analysis provides an objective number based on that property. But, you know, the market analysis may show, based on the price per square foot, that the home is worth $200,000. But like I said, you could have two people looking at that home. One person could say it's worth $195,000. The other person could say it's worth $205,000. And you know what? They both could be right.
If a home is not selling, if it's been on the market for months, is it because it's probably too high a price or maybe the location is bad? What's the number one reason that you just can't sell a home?
Brian, I like to say there's two reasons why a home won't sell. Oftentimes it's price or it's marketing or a combination of both. And so if you've properly marketed the home, if you're getting people in the door, if you've had 15 or 20 showings, and maybe you've had an open house, you've had another 15 or 20 people come to the open house, if after all of those people coming through the home you don't have an offer, it's likely price, because what they're telling you is nice house, but you know, not for me. So everything does sell for a particular price. Oftentimes if it's not selling and people are coming through the door and they're leaving without making an offer, it's a good time to get with your realtor and consider the price.
What else goes into the price other than the home? Sometimes you'll see an ad for a district, great schools. Does a great school district increase the price?
Certainly there are certain school districts that rank higher, mm-hmm. and people have a desire to be in. It's not an accident that you can look at, I mean, the town of Colony is a great example, where you can have a particular home in North Colony selling for a premium, whereas the similar home in South Colony won't sell as high because the school district in North Colony is ranked higher, and there's a greater demand for people who are relocating to the area to be in North Colony.
800-348-2551, the number to call. It's 800-348-2551. We're talking real estate today, buying and selling a home with Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate, who specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Martin. Go ahead, Martin.
Hey, guys. It's amazing you guys are doing this today. I really appreciate the show.
Sure.
I'm actually a buyer. I talked to the screener earlier, and I talked about something different, which I'll try and touch on at the end. But I'm a buyer, and we have found the perfect home. We're actually going to pay cash for the house. We're not going to get a mortgage or anything. So our concern is with the price of the house in square footage, and the other houses in the area. I mean, I don't know if that is a big thing, but they're asking around $275 for this house, and there's houses with almost 2,000 more square feet going for that same price in the area. How do I come to terms with the price? I mean, everything is immaculate in the house. It's got a 3-year-old furnace. Everything is pristine throughout. Everything we want. It's the perfect home for us. How do we come to an offer? Because it's not going through real estate. It's buyer to seller.
Yeah, Martin. So you know the seller personally? Is that how you came into the home?
I'm an acquaintance. So
okay.
To speak.
And did you say is there any sort of financial distress on the property, or is it?
No.
Okay.
No.
So, you know, what you could do is, certainly I would recommend at the very least, if you don't have a real estate agent, you're going to want to get an attorney to help with the closing. You're going to need somebody who can research title and record the deed.
That I have.
So mm-hmm. One of the things you do is when you get with your attorney to draw up the contract, you could condition the offer on an appraisal by an independent appraiser. Ordinarily, if you were getting a mortgage, the bank would do an appraisal, but you could hire your own appraiser to do an appraisal, and you could condition the offer on that. That would be one way to have some sort of peace of mind, to have some independent expert verify that what you're paying is really what the house is worth.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful, actually. I really appreciate you taking the time to help me.
Good luck.
Thank you very much for calling. It's 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, Vox Pop today. Real estate questions for Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. Let's talk to Tommy in Neversink.
Hi, I had two questions.
Sure.
One is, has the decision not to frack New York helped real estate values?
You know, I'm not sure, Tommy. Where we are in the Capital Region, where I do most of my business, it's really been a non-issue, I think. I think in the southern tier, the answer might be a little different. I actually grew up in Binghamton, but I'm not sure, I don't know, to be honest with you.
And how accurate is Zillow, the rating service? Because we see our house is worth a lot less than we think it is on Zillow.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, Zillow is not often accurate. The best way to get an accurate assessment of the value of your home is to bring in a licensed real estate professional who's familiar with the area. Zillow is going to be an automated computer algorithm. It's not going to take into account any updates you've done, some maybe special features of the house, the layout, the location, the light. These are all variables that play into price. So unfortunately, Zillow is more accurate if you have a cookie cutter home and in a community where there's a high volume of sales. But the more unique your home is, or the less sales volume there is in your area, oftentimes you'll see that Zillow is less and less accurate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling. It's 800-348-2551. Our guest, Alexander Monticello, Monticello Real Estate. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, reopening on March 1st with activities for children and adults, featuring two new exhibitions, From House Pets to Endangered Species and The Artist Revealed, arkellmuseum.org. And Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce, offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill, upstatedivorcemediation.com.
Today on Vox Pop, Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is our guest, and we're taking calls about residential real estate today. Let's go to Jim in Ballston Lake. Jim?
Oh, thank you. That was very quick. I have a kind of an odd situation. I'm 70 years old. My wife and I have been separated for a long time, and she lives in a house, and I pay the mortgage. And the time has come to sell the house. She's living there by herself, and actually she's left. She's abandoned it, and apparently there's been a number of issues she didn't take care of that have to be fixed. And my question is, at what point do you just sell the house as is rather than refinance a mortgage to do what could be extensive repairs? Is there a cutoff point?
You know, that's a tough question. I think, obviously, calling a real estate professional who can come in and take a look at the house, they'll be able to give you a much better assessment. What are some of the issues or repairs that need to be made?
Well, we don't communicate that well, but I believe there's a leak in the roof that I thought had been fixed, but she didn't fix it. Lots of superficial stuff like the carpeting needs to be totally replaced, the new garage door, and numerous other small things. Mm-hmm. She has some problem with the plumbing, but very vague about it.
Is anybody living in the house now?
No, that's one of the problems. She abandoned the house, and probably what I need to do is get legal help, but I'd like to try to avoid that. And she's agreeable to selling the house, but she wants to refinance with, you know, for thousands of dollars and fix it up. And then there's no guarantee then the house would be sold. So I'm wondering if how much do you lose if you just sell something as is?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to say without seeing the house.
Yeah.
My instinct would be it might be easier to fix the issues that need immediate repair, like a leaky roof. You need to make sure that, you know, the windows are in good shape, that it's got adequate heat, and that there's no, you know, water coming into the house. So, you know, I would make those fixes immediately.
Yeah, it's very complicated because actually in leaving, she actually had the power turned off there.
So. Yeah, yeah. So that, you know, I think your best bet may be to simply try to sell it as is. But, you know, my recommendation would be to call up a local professional, have them come in the house, and they can give you a more accurate assessment.
Okay, I appreciate it. Because I can't imagine trying to work together with various contractors getting the work done.
Yeah.
Probably jump off the roof or something. Okay,
thank
you very
don't
much.
Do that.
Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. The nice word for that is fixer-upper, isn't it?
Yep, that sounds like a fixer-upper.
Yeah. 800-348-2551. We're talking about real estate today. Our guest, Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. Buying or selling a home is the focus today. We talked a lot about buying, but let's talk about selling a little bit. What's the first thing after you call the broker that a seller should do? Obviously, you want to make the house look nice. Some repairs should be made, I guess, if they're needed. But what else should be done?
Oftentimes, I recommend if you're selling your home and maybe you've been in there for 10 years or more, you want to declutter to the extent that you can get a storage bin or, you know, clean out closets, clean out basement and attic. The less stuff you have in the house, the bigger, the more spacious it will feel. So that's often an important first step, and it can be hard the longer you've been in the home.
800-348-2551. Joan is in Greene County. Joan.
Yes. I wanted to ask a question about what New York State law allows. Does it allow you to auction your home? I mean, can you put like a bid that you don't even have to tell them the lowest bid, but you can start at a certain price and auction it?
Joan, I don't handle auctions, but I do know that there are real estate professionals out there in New York that do specialize in auctioning off properties. And it's you want to get the right professional because based on how you advertise the auction can determine whether, in fact, yeah, you have to take a bid or whether you can reject all bids and you know, not sell the property
right.
if you're not satisfied. But absolutely, there are real estate professionals out there who specialize in that, and you know, I would recommend contacting one.
Do you know how I could go about looking for those that are involved in auctioning, or would it be on Google, do you think?
Google is a wonderful thing. I would try Googling it. If you don't have any luck, if you send your information, you can reach out to me, and I can see if I can steer you in the right direction.
Okay, I can get that from the website?
If you can go to my website, it's just MonticelloNYS.com, or you can Google me, Alex Monticello, real estate broker.
Okay.
You should find that.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you for calling. It's 800-348-2551. Is there a best time of the year to buy or sell a home? I imagine people aren't going out in this weather to look at homes.
You know, I'm working with a lot of buyers right now, and I think that's in part because interest rates are at historic lows and there's a bit of a pent-up demand. Generally speaking, the springtime when the grass is green and, you know, there's leaves on the trees, that's the best time to sell your home because that's when it looks the best. And that's when the most buyers are out. May oftentimes is the month where there's the highest number of pending sales, meaning the largest number of purchase contracts take place in May. So spring is the best time to list and sell, but there's also an upswing after August and September, usually in terms of selling. In terms of buying, I like to tell people the dead of winter when there's 2.5 feet of snow on the ground is a great time to buy. December, in the middle of the holidays, when a house has been on the market for several weeks or months, you have a little bit more leverage as a buyer.
There used to be a time when if you were going to sell your home and if the broker was going to sell it for you, they put an ad in the newspaper and that was pretty much it. Now that you've got so many other things, like what's the MLS?
You know, the MLS is the organization that handles all of the real estate listings in the Capital Region. In the Capital Region, it's called the Greater Capital Region Multiple Listing Service. And generally, each regional area in New York State has their own MLS. Certainly, if you're going to sell your home, it's incredibly important that you put it in the MLS. But there's a lot more, as you pointed out, Brian. The World Wide Web and the advent of a lot of these listing portals like Zillow and Trulia and other online websites have really created an environment where marketing your home on the MLS is no longer sufficient enough. You need to be on these other real estate portals. You know, back in the day, several years ago, real estate agents were the gatekeepers. And if you wanted to see a home, if you wanted to get access to the MLS, you needed to hire a real estate broker. Nowadays, buyers can really search from the comfort of their own home on Trulia, on Zillow, on these other websites, and look at all the available homes that are for sale. So when you're selling a home, I encourage people to think about how buyers in 2015 are searching and finding your home and making sure that your home is properly marketed online.
The number to call is 800-348-2551. Jim, go right ahead. Simsbury.
Hi. I'm wondering if there's enough data out there yet, or if you have enough experience to give an opinion on whether or not solar panels that produce all the electricity a house needs adds to the value of a house or subtracts from it or changes it in any way.
Yeah, Jim, I haven't seen any particular data on this, but my instinct would say it probably improves it, right? Because what you're doing is, in many ways, you're making the home more affordable by reducing that monthly energy cost for the buyer. So that's a cost that the buyer won't have to pay for, and therefore, you know, could in theory afford more of a purchase price, more of a mortgage. Are the solar panels on the roof or are they on the ground?
On the roof.
Okay. And were they is the roof insured? Were they installed by a professional?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think especially if you've got a warranty on the roof and this was installed by a professional, and you can demonstrate in your utility bills the savings, I would argue that probably improves the value from a buyer's point of view.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard an in-ground swimming pool is a turnoff for people.
You know, there are probably more than 50% of the buyers out there that have no interest in an in-ground swimming pool.
Especially if they have kids, they don't have to keep an eye on them all day.
Especially if you have kids. Yeah. And depending on where you are, I mean, there are a lot of great in the capital region. We're blessed with many of the municipalities have fantastic public swimming areas. So I've worked with clients in the past where their kids have said they don't want a swimming pool at home because they like going to the public pool to meet all their friends. What I think we can say is that a pool, you may spend $40,000 or $50,000 to install a pool, but you're certainly not going to get anywhere near that value back. So if you're putting in a pool, you better just love it and really enjoy sitting in your backyard. Don't expect to get the money back.
We have a Twitter. Bennett on Twitter. What is the ideal number for a down payment for a home? Still 20? Can you talk about a down payment help for first-time buyers?
Yeah. Well, Bennett, I would argue in this current market, the ideal down payment is really as little as you can put down. And I say that because interest rates are at historic lows. And in many ways, if you have 20% for a down payment on, say, a $200,000 house, that's $40,000. Your money might be able to do better for you elsewhere than getting tied up in the house, and you can borrow money at less than 4% interest rate on a 30-year fixed. So there are a lot of great banks out there. Generally, on a conventional loan, you can go as little as 5% down. I would recommend probably putting somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 10% down. Some banks out there will allow you, if you put as little as 10% down, to avoid PMI, which is the mortgage insurance. Typically, the 20% threshold has always been used to signify the amount of money that you need to put down to avoid mortgage insurance. But I think if you talk with a mortgage professional and you run the numbers and you look at what your money could be doing in other investments, I think you'll see that going with less down in many respects may be more beneficial to you in the long run.
Let's go to Liz in Amherst. Liz.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. My question has to do with I'll be selling my house, and I was wondering if you could give some suggestions as to how to determine what repairs you really should make and which ones you should leave alone and not open a can of worms, or put overly much money into something you won't be able to, reap the benefit of.
Yeah, this is a great question, and it's a little difficult to answer without actually seeing the house. But I tend to be fairly conservative in terms of improvements that you should make right before you're selling. If you're going to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a new kitchen, you're probably not going to get that money back. What's the price point of your home?
Well, it should be in the... at a very minimum, in the high threes.
Okay. And where is it located?
It's in western Massachusetts, in the Hilltown area.
Okay. I think if you meet with what my recommendation would be is reach out to three different realtors, bring them into the home and see what they have to say. They all probably will have some good ideas. They all will have some bad ideas. But, generally speaking, new carpeting, refinishing the floors, maybe changing out countertops, changing out lighting, painting. These are all easy and relatively inexpensive repairs. If people start talking about, replacing new cabinets, wholesale renovation of a kitchen, wholesale renovation of a bathroom, that's where you can get into areas where you may not be able to get the money back. But changing of countertops, improving flooring, changing wall colors, and even changing light fixtures are relatively inexpensive and can be, definitely worth the money.
Yeah. What about something like trying to solve a longstanding problem of seepage in the basement?
That sounds like a great idea to address, and I'll tell you why. Because it's going to come up probably one way or another, either on your inspection or just from buyers, you know, looking at the house. So I would definitely recommend addressing that issue. I mean, that's probably an issue, you know, that you're going to, whether you sell or not, you're going to want to have fixed.
Okay.
And I'll also tell you this, buyers notice when a house is well cared for. So, you know, you could have a perfect first and second floor, but if they get into the basement, and I've been with buyers and seen this happen, if you get into the basement and you see something that's like water seeping into the basement, it can be a real turnoff, and it can scare a lot of buyers away.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you very much.
Brian from Duanesburg is asking questions pretty much along the same lines as Liz did. He wonders if the carpets should be cleaned or replaced. Also, landscape is extensive but somewhat overgrown. Some exterior trim needs to be repaired. Again, what do you do? What do you leave alone? What about the carpeting?
Yeah, I think depending on how bad the carpeting is, at the very least, you'd want to steam it and clean it. If it's in really bad repair, it might be an easy fix to replace the carpet. You have to think about the impression that your home is giving and any buyers as they walk in. Oftentimes, buyers are quick to make first impression or get a first impression of your home. So I would definitely clean the carpets. If that doesn't work, you'd want to replace them. Trim on the outside is another important thing. If it's an obvious issue and it's visible to buyers as they're coming up to the house, you're going to want to fix it to let buyers know this is the house that you've maintained.
Do buyers get a first impression? Do they even make their decision before they go through the front door, do you think?
Sometimes. Yeah. And, sometimes people will, and I've heard of stories where buyers will, they may not like the curb appeal of the home, mm-hmm. but once they get inside, it can be a bit of a surprise. I'll be honest, my wife and I, we just bought a home in August in Albany, and it doesn't have the greatest curb appeal. And I think it wasn't until we got inside the home that we really enjoyed it. So, I think, take a look at the pictures, but sometimes you want to get inside before you make that final decision.
Luckily, I've got good neighbors, but I think you want to sell a beautiful house, but unfortunately, you got somebody next door who's got the car in the front yard up on the blocks, and you've got the lawn is not mowed, and the shutter is falling off, and there's nothing you can do about it. But what do you do about it?
Well, I don't know. That's a really difficult question, and it can be unfortunate because buyers will notice that.
Sure,
and
they
if
will.
It's an obvious issue, another scenario is a neighbor who's got posted no trespassing signs all across their yard. Never a good indication when you're going to buy a home that you've got friendly neighbors when they've posted up no trespassing signs. So, yes, I think if to the extent that you could come to some agreement with that neighbor, maybe offer them some money to tow away their car, I would do whatever's possible because it's going to make it that much harder to sell.
Yeah, I live near a firehouse. It doesn't bother me. The alarm goes off. The fire trucks go out at 3 in the morning. But for some people, maybe that's a problem.
Right.
Yeah. 800-348-2551. Rosemary in Newburg.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Rosemary, I'm afraid we're losing you. You may want to call back and ask if you can get through on a cleaner line. Sorry about that. Edward in Lake Katrine. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead.
We are selling our house shortly, well, in the summertime, because nobody would want to buy it right now because it's a bear to get to. We're on a private road, and a lot of plowing has to be done to get people up here. So that's an issue. One of the issues is we have other people living on the same private road, and we've been told by a real estate agent we ought to have an agreement with other people about how to take care of property and plowing and stuff like that. So that's one issue. Another is the matter of selling this house. We might be able to get almost as much for the sale as we are spending for the house we'll be moving to. So that would reduce our mortgage payments there at the bank, which would be a good thing, I think. But I'm just curious about whether we've done a lot of the stuff you've talked about as far as getting things ready for sale. And one of the thing you just mentioned, no trespassing signs. We have 13 acres of woodlands.
Oh, you
and
want
we've
to
had hunters coming up here shooting deer in our property who were not invited here. Yeah. So we have to have no trespassing signs up.
Yeah, I think Alex probably meant a suburban kind of thing when you've got you know, barbed wire around the house or something. But I don't think most people would care about that. What about what do you think of this caller? I mean, what advice can you offer?
Well, I think your realtor's right, and it would definitely help to have a written agreement in terms of sharing the responsibilities of plowing the shared road.
Should we have a lawyer?
I think it never hurts to consult a lawyer. I mean, this is. Do you have a survey? Who owns the property? Is it a shared? Do you know? Are there easements?
Yeah, there are easements.
Okay. It can't hurt to consult a lawyer and ask for their advice. I mean, are you friendly with your neighbors?
Yeah.
Okay. How has it been handled in the past as far as plowing the area?
We sort of chip in, but some people don't. they take advantage of our largesse.
Right. Yeah, I guess that could be tricky. I mean, maybe if there are people that are already contributing, the easiest thing would maybe just let them know, hey, we're trying to sell our home. We'd like to just show that there are we're sharing the responsibility of maintaining this road with you. Could we just put something in writing so that we can share it with future owners? And they may be interested in doing that, too, because they would want to make sure when you depart that whoever is buying your home is going to pick up their fair share.
Good
so,
idea.
You know, it's probably in their interest. And you know what? You could probably do that informally without consulting an attorney. It may intimidate them if you start bringing an attorney involved.
Good.
So that would be my suggestion.
Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their new website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, So Our Past Has a Future, preserveNYS.org. And Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new. 845-901-6129.
Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. It's Real Estate Today, buying or selling a home. Alex, you've mentioned lawyers several times in this program, and I guess there are two times you need a lawyer in your life, if you're charged with first-degree murder or if you're selling a home, because it is such a labyrinth. It is absolutely mind-boggling. I don't know how the lawyer kept it all straight.
Yeah, I agree. And Brian, there's something I got to tell you. I'm also a licensed attorney, but
right.
I don't practice law anymore. I just do real estate full time. But I do. You certainly want an attorney when you're purchasing or selling a home. It's a relatively small cost when you think about it. Oftentimes, the attorneys will take a flat fee. And you only pay them if the house closes. But I consider it an insurance policy. And certainly if you're making a $100,000 investment or more, get an attorney and make sure they're there for both the purchase or the sale.
What is the title search?
Title search is something that the attorney does after you go under contract. And they want to do a couple of things. They want to verify, one, that the person who's selling you the home actually owns the home. They want to verify that there are no other owners or people with property interests mm-hmm. or right to the property. They also want to verify there are no liens on the property, that no creditors have claim to any sort of part of that title. So you'll often hear the term clean title, which means that the owner or the seller owns it free and clear and nobody else has a claim against that property. That's what you want when you purchase a home. You can also, and this is highly recommended when you are purchasing a home, you also can get title insurance. Because even though the attorney may research and verify that there's clean title and there may be no liens found at the county courthouse on the property, mistakes happen, and if the deed was not properly recorded or the lien was not properly recorded on your property, and it didn't come up in the title search, which the attorney did properly, you could still be liable for that lien. So when you purchase a home and you're getting a mortgage, the bank always requires you to get title insurance for the bank's portion of the purchase. You have an opportunity at the time of closing to also get an owner's policy, owner's title insurance policy. It's a one-time insurance policy cost, covers you for as long as you own the property. And again, it's an incredibly small percentage if you consider the cost.
Is it true that a closing is one of the most legally complicated maneuvers ever? Because I know there was so much to sign, so much to think about.
You know, there is a lot of paperwork, and I'm glad when I get to the closing table that there's an attorney there that handles it, because it is, and especially these mortgages, they're standardized documents, but they can be 20, 30 pages long, with a lot of different clauses. So it's highly legal and definitely worth it to hire an attorney.
Let's go to Nancy in Amherst. Nancy.
Hi. I can't stress about the attorney too much. Friends of ours sold part of their property to their son. And he ended up selling it to someone else. And no attorney was involved. And there was such a terrific problem with a shared driveway and boundaries and who could do what. It's just been a total misery for them afterwards. But I was going to call you and ask about what needs to be done, what can be done when you have an invalid in the home. I have a family member who had a terrific accident, broke their back, and so there's a hospital bed there now, and my friend does not want to remove the carpeting in case the person who's recovering falls, although carpeting is a no-no, you know, in that area. She's already done the countertops and things like that. But what happens when you have a less than ideal presentation because of a special needs, you know, individual?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a tough call. I think to the extent that you can just be open and honest and upfront with buyers when they're coming to the house, that's probably the best way to handle it.
Okay. They were even thinking about trying to move out so they could remove all the medical equipment, but that's a terrifically expensive proposition for them. Okay.
Yeah, that would be a tough question to answer. I guess it'd be up to the family.
Yeah, I think most people would be understanding enough about it. Nancy mentioned a shared driveway. I had a shared driveway when I rented. Never again. Is that a problem when you're trying to sell a home?
You know, Albany actually has more shared driveways.
Yeah.
They're fairly common. I don't think they're particular problems. They seem to work out. And in this case, you're sharing it between two people, as opposed to, it sounds like an earlier caller had several homeowners who were sharing a driveway. So, I think there's less likelihood of a problem when you're just sharing it with an individual neighbor. You both have a mutual interest in keeping it clean, and so everybody can kind of come and go.
800-348-2551. About 10 minutes left in the program. We have an open line or two for Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. We're talking about buying and selling homes today on Vox Pop. Let's talk to Dee in Glenmont. Dee?
Hi, Alex. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
My parents have been trying to sell their manufactured home for about 6 years now. We've gone through three realtors. The problem is that they're in a senior park, and although kids are not allowed, there are two families there that have children, but the landlord still won't let them sell to a family that might have children. So here we sit, and we're not sure what to do, or maybe you could recommend something different.
Is that legal?
You know, there are 55 and over communities out there. I'm not sure if they can, and this is really a question for a real estate attorney, whether they can prohibit you from selling to somebody with children. My recommendation would be since you've been at this for 6 years, it might be worthwhile to call up a real estate attorney and try to get some advice on whether they can prohibit you from selling to somebody with children.
Okay, just a quick follow-up. Thank you for that. They've also been told that they cannot have open houses because they're in a manufactured park. Is that accurate?
That doesn't sound right to me, but, I guess what I would do is I would ask them for the rules and regulations that prohibit these activities that you're looking to do. Take a look at them, and then I would, reach out to an attorney and share them with an attorney.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Best of luck.
Thanks for calling 800-348-2551. The home inspector. Let's talk about that. You want to buy the home. You call in the home inspector. What should that inspector look for, and what should he or she be looking forward to tell you about?
The home inspector is incredibly important, and everybody who's buying the home, you're going to want to get a licensed home inspector to come into that house and inspect it. They're going to look at everything from the foundation in the basement. They'll look at if there's water seepage. They'll look at the electrical panel. They'll look at the furnace and the hot water heater. They'll determine whether there might be any possible asbestos or any other issues in the basement. Then they'll move up to the first floor. They'll check the appliances. They'll make sure, the windows and the electrical outlets are all performing as they should. They'll check the water flow. If you're buying a home with a well or a septic system, you'll also get a well water quality test and a well water flow test, and you also could get a septic inspection. And then, the attic and the roof. Basements and attics are typically where you have the most problems on an inspection in a home, and those are areas that you'll want to make sure your inspector really focuses on.
800-348-2551. Joe in Greenfield. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi. I have a property that has a 5-acre pond, and you don't see the pond from the road. As a matter of fact, from the road, and we want to sell the house next year, from the road, you really can't see anything at all. But once you get in the house or come around the side of the house, it's like, wow, big property, big with the pond. But there's no real comparable for this kind of a property. So we're having a hard time trying to figure out where to set the price on it.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. Have you reached out to a local real estate agent?
I did a few years back, because I put the house on the property a few years back when I was thinking I was going to move, and then I ended up not moving. But it was only in the market for about 6 months, and it didn't sell.
Okay. When did you put that on the market?
Oh, about 10 years ago.
Oh, it was 10 years ago. And was it marketed on the MLS?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You hired a real estate agent at that time?
Local realtor that I hired, yeah.
Well, I think the good news is, since the last time you've listed it, as I was talking about earlier, there's been a lot of changes in the real estate market. So one of the things that you can do when you're hiring a realtor is make sure that realtor is really marketing your property to the fullest extent possible. And so that, that means using the World Wide Web and the power of the internet to really, market the pond and the property and the house to its fullest potential. But I, as far as figuring out what is an appropriate price, I would bring in three different realtors who are familiar with that area, who may have listed similar properties, and see what they say. That will give you a ballpark. You could always take an average of what those three realtors say to get a sense of how valuable the property is. And then you may also have a personal subjective value. If somebody told you the house is worth, $150,000 or $200,000, it may not even be worth it to sell, and you may want it to continue to stay there.
Right. The problem I had was when I did that before, I did have I interviewed four people when I went to pick the realtor that I wanted, and they all didn't seem to think the fact that there was a 5-acre pond right behind the house really made that much of a difference in the price.
Well, they may be right, because we were talking earlier about pools and in-ground pools, and I think if you've got four different realtors who are familiar with the market are all telling you that that pond is not worth that much, I think it's worth listening to them and considering whether they might be onto something, because there may be a limited number of people who are looking for a 5-acre pond. They may be able to kind of take it or leave it, so to speak, for the right house.
Right. Okay.
So, best of luck.
Thank you very much for calling. A few minutes left. Let's go to Angela. Angela, go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Monticello. How are you?
Good. You can call me Alex.
Hey, Alex. I am calling about a property that is not mine. It's my mother-in-law's. She lives out of state and was trying to sell the property, so her son and I have been trying to assist her. So we have 10 acres of undeveloped land that we actually marketed, found a buyer for. They wanted the land. They made an accepted offer. It went to contract, and now the seller's lawyer, that would be my mother-in-law's lawyer, will not respond to anyone.
Gosh, that sounds odd. Is the seller, where's the property located?
Here in New York.
Okay, and where's the attorney located?
The attorney's also in Orange County, New York.
Okay, and is there anybody at the attorney's office that will take calls, or?
I guess they take calls, they take messages. They even accepted a certified letter, but did not respond. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of, can she suggest that she's not being represented legally for the sale, because we're afraid we're going to lose the sale at this point.
Yeah, right. I mean, it sounds like maybe
It's been months.
Maybe you need to get a new attorney.
And you can do that? How do you fire him, and how do you go about getting a new real estate attorney?
Well, I think it would just maybe send them an email and say, you know, hey, buddy, it's been several months. If you don't respond, we need to get another attorney. And then
okay.
In the meantime, reach out to another real estate attorney, explain the situation. They'll be able to advise you on what you need to do to relieve the current attorney of their service.
Relationship, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you call another experienced real estate attorney in Orange County,
mm-hmm.
they should be able to advise you on what you need to do to kind of hire them and get rid of the old one.
Okay. Is there a time frame or a limit to how long you should let your attorney or anybody involved in the sale sit on something like that? Or is there a legal...
Well, unfortunately, I mean, as you pointed out, there are
time frame?
There are dates in the contract would govern that. So
uh-huh.
you're going to have dates in the contract that need to be met.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know if... I've never really gotten this question. I think... You know, when it comes down to it, there's just a reasonable time period. You know, if you're
and
not having, if it's been months and you don't have any response to the attorney, it sounds like maybe something has happened to that attorney and they're no longer giving you the service you deserve.
I've been watching the obituaries. I haven't seen anything, but I'll keep watching.
All right. Thank you very much for calling 800-348-2551. Time for probably one more call. And Martin, it's you. Martin, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a short question. I bought a house 30 years ago. I live in it for the last 30 years. It was built in 1841. I bought it as is, and I bought the cottage next door, which is a two-story cottage, which doesn't have services in it. I'm looking to sell it now that I'm retired, and I bought it as is. I was thinking I could sell it as is, but I haven't heard anything about anything selling as is on your show or anywhere else. We do have services. We have electric, water, heat, all the things I put in personally over the 30 years. We did it one room at a time. And I'd like to know what the status of an as-is sale would be.
We got about a minute left, so I'm going to hang up and then let Alex go ahead. Alex?
So, you know, the as-is sale, I've seen it happen before. Oftentimes, it's indicating that there may be issues on the property. You acknowledge it, and you're simply selling it as-is. You're not interested in really negotiating any potential issues that may come up. For example, you may have a house that's in great condition, but the garage might have some issues. It might have a structural defect or a leaky roof. So you could sell the house you know, and then sell the garage as is. If you're selling a home as is, oftentimes you see that in a bank foreclosure or a property that may have been abandoned or run down. If your house is in good repair and you've maintained it and you've done the work, I don't know if there's any benefit to you selling it as is. It just sends the wrong signal to a potential buyer that there may be problems there.
And I think the inspector is certainly going to take a look at an 1841 house and probably come up with a few ideas.
Yeah, and you know, and I think people who are buying homes that are built in the 1800s understand they're older homes. But again, if you've maintained that well and there aren't any major issues, I'm not sure sure I would recommend selling it as is. Now, the cottage that doesn't have service, that might be like the garage in a certain situation. You might want to sell just the cottage as is.
Alex, one more time, your email, your website?
So my website is MonticelloNYS.com. That's Monticello, N as in Nancy, Y as in York, S as in State.
Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Support for WAMC comes from Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions through the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. NBT Bank offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Thank you for joining us today on Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC Vox Pop on Twitter and Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Our engineer today, Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Brian Shields. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, the annual Oscars show. I think Hot Tub Time Machine probably is not going to win this year. You think? No. Stay tuned now for a news update.